Arthur Blythe with Down San Diego Way. It's from his 1979 album, Lenox Avenue Breakdown. Two entirely different geographic areas, but he manages to fuse them. He died last year from complications of Parkinson's disease, but I like his music, and I suspect that a whole bunch of people listening to it will keep it going. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it's Free Your Mind Friday, our weekly forum in which you get to express your views about anything you think is worthy of consideration and debate. And it's a way to free up your mind so you can put other stuff in. Make room for new stuff. So this is the way we do it. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. I'd like to encourage us to talk about things where you encourage people to react, to find out where their heads are at, where you're going, where they're going. And that way we get this dialogue going, and it's a nifty way, as they say, to start. Now you do this by calling 888-874-4888, and that's the number that gets things started. 888-874-4888. We have Hurricane Florence doing some pretty great damage in the Carolinas, flooding areas out, and but people are still coping. No major reports of deaths and things like that just yet, but expect it. With any hurricane of the size, we should expect that some people would not make it. But on the whole, so far, people are holding out. And we'll see that whether they manage to hold out for the weekend, because we have a couple more days of the storm. And then we have a couple of other storms directly behind Hurricane Florence. So we'll see. Just keep fingers crossed. Keep people in your good thoughts. And let's hope that even with physical damage, the thing is that people are not dying. So those are my thoughts. We start out 888-874-4888. It's Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. We start out with Berkeley, California. Harvey, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Eutrice.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. What's going on?
Well, now that the Trump and his administration has rolled back President Obama's clean power plan, our world is on the road to larger and more powerful earthquakes and tornadoes, ever worsening heat waves like here in California, more severe droughts, out of control forest fires, more devastating floods, and of course, the rising of sea levels that threaten to destroy our coastal cities. And rather than reduce our over-the-top use of fossil fuels, the Trump administration is calling for more geoengineering of our Earth's atmosphere by spraying reflective aerosols into the planet's upper atmosphere to haze the sun. Unfortunately, geoengineering the Earth's upper atmosphere would dramatically reduce the amount of sunlight filtering down to our planet's surface, making our use of solar energy less effective, which would necessitate the dramatic increase in the burning of more fossil fuels like coal, oil, methane, as well as increasing the number of radioactive nuclear power plants to supply the vast amount of electricity that we use on a daily basis. The historic rise of carbon emissions, as well as other greenhouse gases, will dramatically accelerate the heating of our atmosphere, causing more evaporation of water, from our oceans, lakes, and rivers. And most people don't know that water vapor is the most potent of the greenhouse gases. And water vapor absorbs the sun's infrared light, creating more heat, which in turn causes more evaporation, creating what they call a water vapor cycle, which will lead to the beginning of the dreaded runaway greenhouse effect, which is what happened on the planet Venus, where the surface temperature is now 600 to 900 degrees, and our scientists believe that Venus became so hot that their oceans boiled off. So geoengineering the Earth's atmosphere is a poor substitute for reducing greenhouse gases, and now is the time to take action by transitioning to a clean, renewable energy future, because our lives, the lives of our children and those of future generations depend on what we do now to slow this catastrophic heating of our home planet. It really is time to get star-powered. I say let's get solar, because Earth is mama. I just want to thank you, Trees.
Thank you. Always something very deep to consider, and something quite doable, in fact, to forestall even greater dangers in terms of climate change. 888-874-4888. And while I wait for your calls coming in, I want to talk about a responsibility that we'll be taking on next week. I've been kind of hinting at it, and that is to help PRN build its capacity to do what it already is doing, and that is broadcasting. And in order to do that, you know, you have to have equipment, you have to have personnel running that equipment, you have to have a lot of things to keep going. And this station needs help. And so we'll take some time out of our regular programming. We'll continue doing our programming, but we'll also be appealing to you for your generosity and to help the station continue to grow. And that's one of the things, I hate to say it, but in our progressive community, we really need to do better. So look out for that and be joyful about it when we start next week. Denise from New Jersey, you're on the air.
Yeah, hello. I'm calling from a town called North Bergen, New Jersey. And
okay.
I'm tying in with what Harvey was just saying. They want to build a gas-powered power plant in North Bergen, New Jersey, in the Meadowlands, and it's going to be using frack gas from Pennsylvania. And our mayor in this town, it's called North Bergen, is very pro this power plant because she's just money hungry. And the power from this plant would only go to New York. It's not even power for New Jersey. So we're going to get the pollution here, and New York is going to get the power. And it's kind of partially because of Indian Point closing, too. And I don't think a lot of people even know that this is going on. And our governor is kind of iffy. So Murphy, he's like, he just can't say no to anybody about anything, it seems like, you know. And then Cuomo, he's supposedly against it. But then I heard about how he hired the head of a fracking company to be his campaign manager. So he was kind of like trying to stop this gas line that this is going to be tying into. And it's a whole web of people that are just like, you know, corporate baloney that doesn't care about anything but money, you know. And I'm not really a good speaker, so I'm very nervous. I'm sorry if I sound
so. But no problem. So what has been the reaction to this? You describe it as something that not too many people knew about, but been the reaction so far?
I don't think people even, it's been in the paper a little. There's a group called Food and Water Watch. They're against it, and they're trying to be active about it. This town I live in, the mayor is like a bully. He's like, controls the whole town. Everybody's afraid of him, so nobody will say anything against it. And he's also a state senator, so I can't even call my state senator to complain about what's going on in my town, because he's the same person, you know? So it's like this, hopefully, I'm hoping a lot of people will call the governor, Murphy,
Has it started up yet in earnest?
No, it's still begun?
No. Or is it just in the proposal stage?
It's in the proposal stages, but the company has gotten some kind of permits to, like, figure some stuff out. I'm very against it, and I'm also, you know, I'm not, like, the best speaker about it, you know what I'm saying? I'm kind of just a regular person. But I would love if more people would call Murphy's office and say they're against the North Bergen Liberty Generating, because I think he needs to know that people are really against it, and, you know, because he's kind of hedging, even though he wants to get off of fossil fuels and stuff, you know?
Well, thank you for bringing it to our attention.
No, thank you. I'm like so happy there's a forum, and I'm sure people that listen to you will call Murphy's office or text or whatever, and, you know, and there's things on Facebook about it, and there's, you know, you could look it up, and please help us to stop it, because, you know, it's unnecessary, too, because I don't even know if New York even, you know, like, what's Con Edison? I'm not sure if they're, like, even want it. There's going to be, like, a power line that's going to run through the towns here and go across under the Hudson to New York. That's part of it, too. It's just unnecessary. It's wrong. It's just, you know, like, more of the same stuff that, you know, we all have come to expect, you know?
Well, thank you for bringing it to our attention. Hopefully somebody listening today might be able to build on what you just said and give us some more information. Thank you so much, Denise, for your call today. Thank you. 888-874-4888. And we're talking about things that matter to you. You take the conversation wherever you want to take it. And this is the beauty of PRN. This is a space, a shared space for public concerns. People can bring to light, as Denise just did, about a matter that could affect a whole lot of people. And she describes it not only as threatening the quality of life, but she says it's unnecessary. So if you have anybody out there who thinks the same way, let us know some more about this project and why it is unnecessary and it threatens the health and well-being of so many people, your neighbors, your friends, your families. 888-874-4888. Well, we saw the results of, I was watching in particular this race with Cynthia Nixon running for governor in the state of New York. And I had some thoughts about that. I didn't see anything, when she announced and, of course, mounted her campaign. But now we can take a look since the race is over, and we can ask some questions about that. Was that a smart move? Was that what did it prove? You're going up against a well-financed governor of the state, incumbent governor of the state. He has the benefit of longevity in office. He has the benefit of the Cuomo family name and legacy. He has a lot of people willing to put money behind him. But I talk about this not so much as, here's a man running for a third term and he gets it. I'm talking about what are we thinking when we see a candidate running, and we know from the beginning it's a steep uphill climb. And at some point we have to deal with the question of suitability for running. If the point of running is that you have a fair chance to win, she did not have a fair chance to win, even from the very beginning. So what was the point of running? I mean, that's a legitimate question. If it looks like, and from all intents and purposes, all the things that are important in evaluating the worthiness of a campaign, And you are not measuring up. And this is early on. You're getting these indications. You're not going to prevail. You're going to get squashed. What was the point of running? Simply because you could run? What was the thinking there? Was there nobody else? Was there nobody else in all this time who, you know, with a push and a shove, with encouragement, with backing, with organization, would have had a better chance? And should we tolerate this stuff? The campaigns of people who run just because, you know, they're making personal points, but they're not really part of the equation of changing the political landscape, because in so many ways, fundamental ways, okay, these are fundamental things. Do you have a great organization? Do you have, you know, feet on the ground? Do you have a battalion of people pushing your candidacy? Do you have something of a war chest? Do you have, not just in the final days of the campaign, but do you have consistent coverage? All these things are needed. And this is not just talking from the point of view of, oh, well, you're repeating the same thing of this as the establishment. No, these are legitimate points. What then was the point of running? Was there nobody else in a better position to advance the cause than Cynthia Nixon? You know, I thought it to be such a tremendous loss. Loss of time, loss of opportunity, loss of momentum in the struggle to face down the Democratic Party and the candidates in particular. So I didn't get it. Perhaps somebody can tell me what was the advantage of this particular candidacy. Why did it make sense to keep pushing for a candidate that had no hope, really very little hope, of prevailing over the incumbent? In fact, one could argue that the candidacy of Cynthia Nixon emboldened the candidacy of Cuomo for a third term. He had nothing to fear. What was there to fear? I think like that. And I think we have to start asking questions of the progressive world. Many people running under the progressive banner are not yet ready. They haven't done some very important basics and yet believe themselves entitled to run and entitled to support because they're running. And yet, on so many levels, they do not demonstrate that they have proven themselves worthy of the trust and the blessing of the public as an alternative to what already is there. And it amounts then to one person gaining some experience, but that's not what politics is about. It's not about you gathering the experience of a candidate running for the first time. You're either in it to win it, or you should keep walking. Keep going on about your business, and somewhere down the road, you talk to people about what is important to have mastered by the time you declare your candidacy, and by the time you are asking people to take you seriously. But you know, in this world, you can still, even as a progressive, take advantage of white supremacy. Nobody is going to find it wrong or ill-advised that you should use a critical moment that somebody else could have used to advance a legitimate candidacy with good prospects for winning, even if you don't win, but you have really good prospects for coming close. But we end up with a loss. I get so despondent about these things. Because you can see this 20 miles away. This is not something you discover on election night, that your campaign was shot to hell from the beginning. And, you know, it's not about, you know, what your opinions are and all these things. It's about what the math shows, what the numbers show, what the facts show as to whether you're ready right now for a candidacy for governor. Is there somebody else who could, you know, with a little spit and chewing gum, you could hold it together and they could run a credible campaign? But the frustration of effort, the losses, after a while, I've said it before, repeated losses will result in the numbing of people's minds. Repeated losses are going to turn people off. And we have unfortunately experienced that. Patricia from New York, you're on the air.
Hi, good afternoon, New Teresa, and good afternoon to the PRN family.
Thank you. Good afternoon to you, too.
I actually didn't watch the election results. I just previewed it online because I could not bear to watch it. But, you know, I want to note a couple of interesting things. First of all, you know, I'm not really quite sure what Cynthia Nixon thought she was doing, because she never connected with communities of color here in New York. I'm not really quite sure where she campaigned, but I can tell you that we never saw her. So I went to a town hall. I go to all these town halls, and there is an issue in the community where I live, and we try to connect, have her connect with us on that one issue, which is resonating here in our community. We reached out to her campaign over and over and over, and they just completely rebuffed us. I asked people in Brooklyn, my friends in Brooklyn. I don't know where she campaigned. I really don't. So, you know, connecting with communities and connecting with their issues, she did not seem to resonate on any level with anything that was important to us. So her loss is not a surprise. What was surprising to me was why she thought she could win without connecting with the community and connecting with the people. Jumaane Williams, the attorney general race, the lieutenant governor race, that was probably the closest race. And even Jumaane, we reached out to him. No response. And so, you know, if people who are considering running, they have to understand that the first rule is you have to connect with the people. That's what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez did. She went door to door to door and connected with the people. I don't know who these people think they are, that they can just announce that they're running and they don't have to do anything else. Just show up an election and say, vote for me. Who are they? They have no track record. They have no connection to the community. I don't know.
Well, these are the points that we need. We've raised this question many times. I called it the numbing effect. When you have people who lose over and over and over again, people begin to associate the word lose with whatever party they're running for over themselves, the candidates' names themselves. But, you know, I watched it. I said, okay, she's running. She's got at least she believes so. profile as an actress of some note on Sex and the City, I believe the program was, and how she was going to massage that into political currency, I was watching. And I kept saying to myself, these folks are kidding, right? They've got to be kidding. She has people taking pictures of her. The quote coverage was of her riding the subway like any ordinary person. That was supposed to be many kudos for her. I didn't understand it to be that way. You're living in New York. Mayor Bloomberg used to take the subway every day. So what's the issue? And they kept hyping this thing that they were creating of a star, a Hollywood star with, you know, feet solidly on the ground, who proposes to be a champion of the people. It just didn't work.
But my point was, okay, so you're a newbie and you don't know what the issues are in the various communities. If you have communities who reach out to you and say, look, this is an issue. We're a community that delivers a lot of votes. This could be something that you can grab your teeth in. We reach out to you over and say, come, we've got an issue here. And you say no. Then what's the point?
Well, we see what the point is. The point is simply to enjoy that burst of coverage. But I'm responding to it on another level. And that goes back to this notion of white supremacy, which people are inclined to believe that if you say you're progressive, then you can't be. you can't be a white supremacist, even if you are operating on white supremacist attitudes and principles. If you're saying that you're calling and your group is calling many times to get her attention and to invite her into the community to address these problems along with you, and you get no response, how does that differ from the average white supremacist out here?
Seems to me it doesn't.
It doesn't. And then all that time is wasted. In the meantime, Cuomo has the advantage of, you know, his terms in office. He has the advantage of being the son of Mario. He has the advantage of knowing the political architecture of the state. He knows how to raise money. He knows how to conduct a campaign. He has everything going for him. And she had nothing going for her except a desire to do something. But it didn't seem as if she was particularly interested in getting really close to people and finding out in what way could she forge some kind of relationship, especially as a progressive. And that field was wide open to her. Let's hear what a progressive has to say. Okay, the subways are bad. We get that. But it's not the only thing that New Yorkers confront daily. You know, so I was very, very disappointed in her campaign. But I was all the more disappointed because the thinking underlying it was very disturbing to me, and it didn't ring true as a true progressive, you know, who would want to see fundamental changes and who would be so passionate about it that you will not cease to make this known to people in the city of New York and to the state of New York that you want something different and you're willing to work as hard as you can to make these things come into being. She had no fuel behind her, And she seemed to be comfortable. You know, if early on she forecast and broadcast the attitude of a person who was certain that she would lose.
Well,
back to the drawing board, huh?
Yeah, it was a lackluster campaign. In fact, to me, she never really campaigned, so she never really intended to win. And so why she did it, I don't know.
Well, it's the same criticism we've had here on the program about the Green Party. Where is this thing called the Green Party? What are they doing? What are they thinking? How are they connecting? How are they continuing to allow people to understand what they're about? It's like they're dead. And one of the reasons that we have a repeat of the Democrats and a repeat of the Republicans is that we have a repeat of dead candidates who have not been able to fire up the imagination of people because they're not interested in connecting with people at a very fundamental level. And that's what politics is. Got to connect.
Go again.
I agree with you. I agree with your comment. I agree with that comment. Thanks, Patricia, for calling in. 888-874-4888. It's about the halfway point. Let's take a little break and come back to your thoughts. You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. It's Free Your Mind Friday. This is our weekly open forum. You are absolutely invited. No admission fee. The only thing I want to know is that you have an opinion about something. And it's nobody's business whether you're right or wrong or whether they agree or disagree. We just want to hear what it is you're thinking and why you're thinking what you're thinking. And so we can engage with each other on that premise, ask a question here, ask a question there, and we get deeper and deeper into the substance of your thoughts. And that's all it is. And in listening to each other and engaging with each other, we create community. 888-874-4888. Is the number to call. I see people are pretty shy today for some reason. I have no idea. But hopefully you get over your shyness and jump into the fray. Put your two cents in the pot. Let's hear what you're thinking. Okay? So again, to remind you, next week, our charge is that while we do our regular programming, a chunk of it will be devoted to the necessary business of helping PRN meet its goals, provide the services, and to do so with a joyful heart. And that requires a good and generous response from you. And hopefully we can accomplish this together. From Montreal, Randolph, you're on the air.
Hello, Utrice.
Hello.
I just want to discuss something in political science of a far better system of the people's will being expressed in the legislation. So I was thinking that what one would do is one would send a paper with about 100 possible pieces of legislation, And people would actually vote on that. They would look at those things that are of interest to them, and they would just vote. And those which reached a certain level would actually be adopted, and the civil service would put the bones on it, would put the meat on it to be able to carry out the will of the people. Certainly, this might eliminate a lot of the problems of parties being unable to get money, to get media. And the laws, even though a candidate is elected, by the time the legislation that he would like to, his electorate wanted to pass, by the time they're through with it, it's unrecognizable. It's like a piece of filet mignon going in, and by the time it comes out, it's a mishmash of sausage.
It's just mostly manure.
So I think it's really time that people get a chance. Even what they could do is people could put in their own opinions of what laws should be passed. They could ignore all the 100 or so, whatever ideas make sense. They could put in, say, 5 or 6 ideas of their own of what the legislation they would like. In a sense, it's turning around the tables from the messengers who are elected to the people themselves. In other words, they might even be able to eliminate those messengers, because it seems that somehow being a messenger ends up as if you're on the right-hand side of God. And everything you say, everything you do is comes from heaven. Nobody can go after you, can't challenge you. It's the law. But you know, Chinese...
You know, you have nuggets of something there that are workable. But as you were speaking, I kept thinking that what is so well-intentioned, you know, with such a grander vision about this thing called governance and government, and how people and the apparatus of government interrelate with each other in order to help run a well-run, reasonably decent society. There are so many obstacles against it. There's so many moving parts out there.
Exactly.
That will organize and galvanize against it, because there's so much money in doing things people don't want, creating laws that are, in fact, illegal. And we have to take it a step at a time. So maybe, how about thinking about what you just presented and taking it piece by piece? Let's say it's a four-part plan. What would part one be like? What would part two and three and four be like that can be accomplished without a dramatic, sudden shift? You know, so that certain things can be accomplished over a period of time. So maybe you think about it that way. To do it in one fell swoop, well, you're asking for trouble. Nobody wants it. Nobody would do it. And rather than
say
it's a good idea, let's examine it closer, more closely, they would just shoot it down. How do you make your idea palatable to the masses of people and doable in their judgment?
It is a referendum. In other words, it's like a referendum. You send somebody a number, They go on to their internet, and with that number is like a code. Each person has a different number, and they just put what they want. They just check mark what they want. That's it. It's just as gets rid of all these insane lobbyists who are spreading around money like it's water. And it makes people more honest because they're not bribed by the wealthiest of the nation to against their own interests. So it's a simple referendum, but it's not. It's exactly like that.
All right. Well, let's hear what people are thinking about what you just offered today. Thank you so much, Randolph, for calling in. From Georgia, Donald, you're on the air.
Yeah, you chief. This is Donald, and I just like to hear your. I like to hear your response to this. I'm an older guy, and lately I just can't get it out of my head. I mean, how do you feel about the Congressional Black Caucus? I mean, because to me they're a bunch of hypocrites, a bunch of pro-war, I mean, sellouts. I look at people like John Lewis, who's supposed to be a pacifist. He's so moral. Every time he talks to someone protesting here in Georgia, no violence, no violence. But yet, he supports Israel. And they're the most violent nation on earth. I don't understand. I mean, what has happened to our people? And yet, we vote for them again and again and again. I've written letters, sent emails to John Lewis's office, and I get a standard letter sent back. I mean, he don't even show up when you ask him to show up. And yet people, when he walks around, the people say, oh, that's the Honorable John Lewis. And I asked one guy, I just blew up, what is honorable about this Negro? What is honorable about him? And well, he got beat up on the bridge. I said, yeah, and he's still laying on the bridge because he hadn't done nothing for us. I mean, I don't understand. I really don't understand. And it really
How many people do you think, how many people, in your view, do you think have asked for a meeting, not just with John Lewis, but with the Congressional Black Caucus, and to relay to them directly what it is, how it is they're coming to the community, how they are perceived by the community, and what you're prepared to do? I mean, how many people have ever picked up the phone, apart from picking up the phone, but demanding a meeting?
Well, you
and the meeting having certain goals and objectives? Because you see, even with all of its flaws, and there are many, the fact is, could you name an organization with as much, let's say, significance, if you will, as much power, even if it's potential power and not actual power, in Congress, that you could name, that everybody recognizes, that you could do something with, except that we've been backing off when we should be the exact opposite way? How many people do you think have organized Congressional Black Caucus Watch newsletter?
To be true, but I don't know of any.
Exactly.
And what about
is,
more?
We have to engage them. You have to engage them. Because it is quite possible that you are absolutely correct that so many members of the Congressional Black Caucus have just given themselves away to interests. But that is because nobody's saying anything.
You're right. If you
start putting out a newsletter right now, make it clear that every month you are going to be the organization that keeps an eye on the workings of the members of the Congressional Black Caucus on critical issues, and you develop a rating system. This month, the Congressional Black Caucus earns a 1.2 out of 5. On this issue, that issue, the other issue. Who are the scoundrels? Who are the people doing nothing? We don't do anything, so they have no reason to fear us.
That's right, but that goes to another question that makes me angry, and which is a project I can do. These local organizations and these civil rights leaders, I mean, I guess they're in the same bag the Black Caucus are in, because nobody's making any demands of them as well. So, you know, I would think they would speak out. You know,
nobody's demanding anything. It is a simple thing to just start. You get a good 10, 15, 20 people, and you request a meeting to discuss specific issues and your concerns, because you see that there isn't much standing in between what is happening at the community level and what is allowed to happen at the congressional level.
Yeah.
But you know, then if you get no reaction, if you get no response, and you create your own index by which to measure the effectiveness of the caucus on a month-to-month basis on key issues before Congress and how they're voting, you'd be amazed. But we allow them to get away with these things because we don't upbraid them. We don't hold them up to public scrutiny. And yet, the sad thing is, we don't have anything else readily available as an alternative. We need some kind of a mechanism that we could work with in Congress, even if we don't particularly like what they're doing. But if we could decide that there are certain mandates that they should have and they should always follow through on, you know, and we hold them to some kind of accountability, I think we'll begin to see something in the way of movement there. But nobody complains. Except, you know, at voting time and in certain environments. But nobody's complaining. Nobody's holding their feet to the fire. You agree or disagree?
You gave me a good idea. Thanks, you chief.
Thank you for calling in. Thanks a lot. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Yatrice and the Lead Stories family. You're welcome. You're welcome. It's been a long weekend. I think, like so many others, we're kind of tired out and wore out from everything, from the new fear book. So that might be a reason why people, and also the weather here on the East Coast. But I was listening, and I just had to call because in my email inbox since probably July, I have been receiving from the so-called Congressional Black Caucus invitations to parties and galas and all kind of celebrity events that will be occurring, I think, sometime very soon, next week or early in October. I haven't paid much attention to them, and I don't even know how I got on their list. But still, this is their focus, is on partying and having a good time. And, I mean, those meetings and those events should be protested by people who, like, want to show up, like the gentleman just called. It's like, you know, what are you doing? You're not doing anything. Been around, you know, marching and, you know, singing for, you know, 50 years. And yet, what are the results?
But, you know, so, I understand it and I agree with that position. But I also say, be careful not to exercise that level of attack without first giving them fair warning, because we will be doing the handiwork of interests that want the Congressional Black Caucus to disappear.
True.
We want them to be fearful of us.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree. And I actually grew up in the D.C., Maryland area. I worked on Capitol Hill as a kid in Ted Kennedy's office. I saw people, you know, like all of the great politicians, both Republican and Democrats, and rode shoulder to shoulder with them on the subway systems under the Capitol, from the House to the Senate and so forth. And so those were true. They were cut from a different cloth. And they really had purpose, and they were really, no matter what their political side of the aisle they're on, they were basically about delivering for the people and working together. And so, yes, but I agree with you. We can't go out and, as you would say, lop their heads off in one fell swoop. But we do have to give them fair warning and let them know that they need to be accountable. To the people in their communities and in the nation, especially minorities, blacks, Latinos, so-called Native Americans, and also disenfranchised white groups as well, who have been a part of our causes and suffer as well, along with the rest of us.
Well, thank you. And I'm glad you see the logic of it. You don't just go wipe them out. That could come later, but give them fair warning and
give
them some homework. Yeah, give them some homework to do, and tell them the yardstick by which their effectiveness will be measured. And after that, all bets are off.
Most definitely.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for calling in. And that brings us to the end of our program today. I thank you all for contributing so meaningfully. And it says something about you and us together, that we're seeking ways in which to build community, and that is important. It's the weekend. Surround yourselves with people who bring positive dimension to your life, and we'll see each other. Keep your in your prayers and in your good thoughts, the folks in the Carolinas, hoping that they pull through. And we'll see each other Monday. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.